with Bitcoin, there's a lot of evidence that I found that it was helping to build out the renewable grid, that it was helping to make solar and wind operators more profitable, that it was allowing them to be financed where they couldn't be financed previously because they didn't have a customer before they connected to the grid. And then once they were on the grid, that they were a user of that curtailed energy, which was wasted energy. It's been produced at the wrong time of day, wind in the middle of the night where people don't want it, or sun in the middle of the day when people don't need it. And Bitcoin was coming in and was being a buyer for that energy, which made the renewable energy operators more profitable. The lens I came through, I didn't look at this as a Bitcoin OG, I didn't look at it from a miner's perspective. I looked at it from the perspective of someone who's been in the technology ecosystem for a long time. In the last 4 years, has run climate tech funds.
Introducing bids to the Blockware marketplace. Select from dozens of different ASIC models. The marketplace shows you the highest current bid, the lowest asking price, and the most recent sale price. Use this information to set a competitive bid. Once you're ready, input the amount of BTC or USD that you're willing to spend, the quantity of machines you want to purchase, and then hit bid. Once a seller accepts your bid, you'll receive an email notification. Click the link attached and send BTC to the prompted address. After 6 on-chain confirmations, the machine will be yours, and mining rewards will instantly be directed to your Bitcoin wallet. Get started today at marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Blockware Intelligence Podcast. This week I have on Daniel Batten. Daniel, welcome.
Yeah, thanks Joe. Great to be here.
Absolutely, glad to have you. Let's jump right into it. KPMG just released a very interesting Bitcoin ESG report. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a breath of fresh air to finally be reading something that people have written about Bitcoin, where I'm not just going, what are you doing? Because I've read so many reports which were obviously written by people who didn't have the basic understanding of either Bitcoin or Bitcoin mining. And what immediately struck me with this is that here's some people who are professionals, who are used to doing investigative research, who didn't have an agenda. It wasn't like someone told them, by the way, the conclusion is Bitcoin is terrible for the environment, now go and find some supporting data and spin it any way you have to. They went out their objective and they had the buy-in of the ESG manager of KPMG as well, who had to see across it and had to really be accountable to KPMG's position on this. So they went through a lot of research. And these things are nuanced. They're really nuanced. And so if you don't do the deep research, you're going to come up with some very superficial and some very wrong conclusions. We've seen the New York Times do that, come up with some drastically wrong conclusions about demand response, which do not correspond with reality, which do not correspond with what the grid owners themselves say about Bitcoin's utility to the grid. But they went beyond these superficial apparent understandings to the deeper true understanding. And so it's like there's a few things in life where the obvious truth is wrong and the apparent falsehood is correct. And we can say, for example, heliocentricity, the idea that the Earth revolves around the sun. That's not an obvious truth. You know, people looked back in the day and they said, no, that's false. You can see. And in the morning, the sun's here. And in the afternoon, it's here. Clearly, the sun's going around the Earth. And then the same way, people said the Earth's spherical. People say, no, you can see it's flat. How could it possibly be spherical? People would fall off. And then similarly with Bitcoin, people are saying, oh, well, there's all these Bitcoin miners on the grid. They're kicking other people off the grid. They're stealing our renewable electricity, et cetera, and then people say, no, that's not the case. Actually, they're using electricity that no one else can use, that otherwise would get wasted, that's helping to incentivize renewables. But again, this is another case of when humans will bifurcate into a camp which is happy with the superficial apparent truth versus those ones who want to do the deeper dive and discover what is actually truth. And I was very happy to see that clearly, KPMG had taken the second approach, because this takes a lot of hours to do. Particularly if you're coming at it and you're trying to understand how grids work, you've got a lot to wrap your heads around to try and understand how it can influence. You've got to understand a little bit about how renewables work, a little bit about how grids operate. You've got to understand a bit about Bitcoin mining. You've got to understand a bit about Bitcoin itself. And if you don't have at least some understanding in all four, then you can come up with the wrong conclusions. So I was very happy to see that they had taken the time and the care and the due diligence to really understand things deeply before they committed pen to paper. And I wished that a few journalists and environmental NGOs, frankly, did the same thing more often.
Yeah, very well said. I mean, I thought it was great seeing like a traditional accounting and advisory firm really embrace Bitcoin from the ESG.
Well, this is the traditional finance system embracing the new a new model of money, a new way of a new store of value, and understanding and starting to wrap its head around the utility of it. And so it's pioneering. And I think it's a milestone moment because it's really the first time ever from the traditional finance ecosystem that you've had such a well thought through, well researched endorsement of not just saying this is not as bad for the environment as we thought, but actually saying this is positive. This has a positive, net positive ESG rating. That's huge.
Yeah, 100%. It's awesome. So Daniel, I'm curious to hear more about your background and how you got into this space and what you're doing now.
Completely by accident. So a year and a half ago, I was not in this space at all. I'm late to the party, so I'm definitely not a Bitcoin OG. I'm learning very, very fast, and there's people who know way more about Bitcoin than I do and way more about Bitcoin mining than I do. That the small piece that I've tried to wrap my head around personally has been this intersection between Bitcoin and energy, or Bitcoin and environmental impact. So the lens I came through, I didn't look at this as a Bitcoin OG. I didn't look at it from a miner's perspective. I looked at it from the perspective of someone who's been in the technology ecosystem for a long time, who's invested in technology, impact technology, and in the last 4 years has run climate tech funds and has seen maybe over 100 different climate tech technologies, and was introduced to this by someone who said, you should look at this because this actually has some positive climate advantages. And I was like, yeah, right. But because I was coming at it from an angle of an investor, I was duty bound to do some thorough due diligence. So I had to go through a similar process that KPMG went through, which was to put aside my initial prejudices and look at what the data was telling me. And when I started to do that and invest the time, just as KPMG did, to understand a little bit about grids, a little bit about Bitcoin, a little bit about Bitcoin mining, a little bit about how renewable transitions occur, and then latterly methane mitigation, which we can go into later, it was very clear that the non-apparent truth, which is that Bitcoin is actually net positive, was very different to the traditional narrative, which people are forming based on too superficial a look, because that's how it appears from the outside. So that's how I got into it. I got really fascinated, and what a lot of people in the Bitcoin ecosystem don't realize, because I've seen so many other different technologies, I understand the constraints and the problems we face in trying to create technologies that can have a net positive environmental benefit. One of the problems I face is that most of the technologies that I've traditionally invested in, number one, it's very hard to quantify how much emissions they can mitigate. Secondly, most of the impact is going to be felt after 2030. And the third thing is that it's all quite high risk. You're investing in technologies which may have only a 20% chance of seeing the light of day. And so what I liked about Bitcoin is you can quantify it. So I do a lot of data analysis, as a lot of people who follow me will know. I like to go into the numbers. So Bitcoin lends itself, you can get really quite precise with the numbers. You can show if you're using this sort of Bitcoin mining, then here's the emissions it's going to create. But if you're using another sort of Bitcoin mining, here's the emissions that will mitigate. And you can do the maths on it and work out that if you do a certain type of Bitcoin mining, you can actually help the Bitcoin network to offset more emissions than it will create. So I was fascinated in the data, I was fascinated in the potential, and I also saw a parallel from another technology, which was the photovoltaic industry. And what people need to understand is that sometimes people say, well, you know, that's all future promise, but what about Bitcoin today, it's got a carbon footprint. For me, I don't have that concern because every single technology I invest in has a carbon footprint. I'm investing in technologies that can mitigate 20 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalents per year, but they're not doing that today. That's all just some future promise. Today, like all technologies, they have a carbon footprint. And Bitcoin's the same. It has a carbon footprint. Solar was the same. It had a carbon footprint. But you have to have a more nuanced look and say, okay, well, that's sometimes you need to create a carbon footprint if it has the promise of over time being able to deliver and not only mitigate that footprint, but actually do a lot more good to the world. And then you just got to analyze and look at it and say, well, is this just promise? Is this greenwash? Or does this actually stack out? Is the evidence this could happen? Can we quantify it? Where's the evidence that's already occurring? And with Bitcoin, there's a lot of evidence that I found that it was helping to build out the renewable grid, that it was helping to make solar and wind operators more profitable, that it was giving them a first customer, that it was allowing them to be financed where they couldn't be financed previously because they didn't have a customer before they connected to the grid. And then once they were on the grid, that they were a user of that curtailed energy. And so what that did is it curtailed energy, which was wasted energy, where it's been produced at the wrong time of day, wind in the middle of the night where people don't want it, or sun in the middle of the day when people don't need it. And Bitcoin was coming in and was being a buyer for that energy, which made the renewable energy operators more profitable. And it was very apparent to me that this was having a very positive impact on the renewable build-out. We could see the evidence on it in Texas. We looked at that in some detail. And we could also see evidence that what KPMG wrote about as demand response. In other words, it could help stabilize the grid, which was tremendously important. And we've seen numerous advantages now of where there's been storms and there's been peak power demand and where that flexibility, that shock absorber that Bitcoin plays is very unique and can help stabilize the grid where other technologies, other forms of demand response are inferior because they're not as instantaneous, they're not as flexible, and they're not, you can't precisely calibrate how much you dial them up and down. So that's kind of compressing a lot of stuff that I had to wrap my head around into a short couple of sound bites. But yeah, my background was climate tech. I went into the weeds and I came up with the conclusion that this actually compares very favorably to other technologies that I've looked at.
Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear your background. And I definitely agree Bitcoin is doing a great job at balancing the grid, and I feel like it will continue to do that much more in the future. I know you're also into landfill gas-powered Bitcoin mining. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so partway through the research, I can't even remember how I found out about it. I think what was happening at the time was I was asking myself this other question, and I had no idea it would lead me to the same point. But the other thing I became aware of was that methane is now called by the United Nations our number one lever to reduce climate change. And if you look at our methane levels, they're rising parabolically. They're going up very steeply at the moment. So carbon dioxide's going up linearly, but methane's going up parabolically. And so I went, okay, so where is this methane coming from? And we found that a lot of it was actually coming from landfills. It's known to be the number three source of methane. But the thing is that NASA did some satellite footage where they monitor the actual emission levels of landfills. And they did this over a 6-year period. And what they found was our landfill emission levels were more than two times what anyone thought when they measured actual emissions into the sky as opposed to using the EPA's estimates, which was based on how much garbage was going in there and some inferences. And when you recalibrate it, landfills actually comes out to be our number two source of methane. And so that's kind of curious. And then I got interested and I said, well, what's the growth rate? What's number one? Number one's agriculture. Number two is landfills. Number three, oil and gas industry. That's based on the recalibration on that NASA aerial footage. And then I looked at the growth rate. So agriculture is growing at 0.7% per year, methane emissions. Landfills, according to the World Economic Forum, is growing at 1.4% per year. I said, okay, how many years is it going to take? Because you can see what's going to happen. Landfills is going to overtake if it's growing 0.7% faster every single year. And the answer is 2032. So in other words, within 10 years, landfills is going to be our number one source of methane, and methane is our number one source to slow down climate change, according to the UN Environment Program. And I thought, you're kidding me. And then I thought, well, what? Okay, if it's such a big problem, then surely we're doing something about this, right? Wrong. We're doing virtually nothing about it. When those landfills are close to the grid and you don't need to upgrade the grid, then sure, in those cases, you can convert that landfill gas, you can purify it, send it to a generator, that generator turns it into electricity, and that can be sold back to the grid. Okay, two things have got to be true. It's got to be not involve a substantial grid upgrade for that to occur, and the grid has got to be a potential buyer for that electricity, which sometimes it isn't because of it's a state-owned enterprise or there's a lot of bureaucracy or whatever. So Mexico, for example, you can't sell to the grid. I mean, technically you can, but bureaucratically you can't. In the US, it's the other way around. Bureaucratically you can, but technically, in 70% of cases, you can't because it's going to require too much of a grid upgrade to an aging grid infrastructure. So what do you do for those 70% of landfills in the world where selling that power back to the grid is not an option? Well, you can't export it, which means you have to use it on site. Okay, well, who might be able to use a whole lot of power which is stranded and wasted in an inconvenient place and doesn't mind setting up their business on somewhere which is dirty and smelly? Well, it's not going to be a hospital. It's not going to be a retail front store, right? It's not going to be a place that sells Louis Vuitton handbags. It's going to be the very few types of businesses in the world who don't mind going somewhere in the middle of nowhere and setting up shop. And that's people who operate data centers. And if you look at what sort of data centers, it's going to be the ones who are prepared to chase that cheap electricity the hardest. And who are they? They're the ones who have electricity as the biggest proportion of their operational expenditure. And that's guess who? Bitcoin miners. So these two different areas converged. And I was like, you're kidding me. And I thought, this is amazing. And the other thing I like about it is not only is this very high impact, because we're talking here about reducing the number one source of our number one lever to slow climate change. So that's significant. Now, can Bitcoin mobile data centers do all of that? No, sometimes it's not going to be economically viable, even if it's logistically possible. However, there are definitely a whole lot of landfills out there, and we've done the math on it, where it is economically viable. And so that's what we said, okay, well, what do? I set up funds which invest in novel technology that otherwise wouldn't have got backing. I make sure they make economic sense, so the wholesale investors into our fund get a healthy return on investment, and I make it profitable to help people do things which are good for the planet. And so I said, well, can we do the same? And long story short, we built a team of people who come from, have experience not only in investing in novel technologies as I do, but who understand how credit works, how credit financing works, how traditional real estate models of investment works, because fundamentally we're investing in real estate, we're investing in Bitcoin mining rigs. And so we've got a great team, an amazing team of advisors, and we have found a way where we can make methane mitigation profitable at scale. And so this is going to be our third fund. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that Fund 3 was going to be focusing, a niche fund, focusing on putting Bitcoin mining rigs on landfills. But it came out of just asking that question, how can we have the biggest impact? And how can we do something that's making a measurable difference to emissions and is making a measurable difference pre-2030?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds awesome being able to, I guess, effectively convert trash into Bitcoin. That seems pretty cool.
It's alchemy. You're converting rubbish, the waste of 50 years of a consumption-fueled economy, into digital gold.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I guess one question that I have about it is, like, how big is the market? Like, is there just plenty of landfills to where this could power like a large portion of the entire Bitcoin network, or how big is it? Hey everyone, this week I want to talk about Stamp Seed. This is very cool metal plate where you can literally stamp your Bitcoin seed phrase with this hammer that they sell you into this metal plate. This is a must-have for all Bitcoin holders. If you have taken self-custody of your Bitcoin, you want to make sure you've recorded your seed phrase on something that is fireproof, waterproof, and time-resistant. This is a great product for Bitcoiners who have taken self-custody and want that extra level of security and resiliency to store their Bitcoin. So if you are interested in this product, definitely check out stampseed.com. Use code BLOCKWARE15 for 15% off the entire website.
So there's two things we look at as fund managers. We look at what's logistically possible and we look at what's economically viable. When you look at what's logistically possible, so you have this many landfills in the world, of them only a portion is logistically viable. So if it's an open dump, no, not logistically viable because it's not capturing that landfill gas, it's just escaping. And then you get down, so you basically, the amount of landfills that are logistically viable, you have enough for 17 gigawatts of power. So that's more than enough to power the entire Bitcoin network today. That's, you could power it 1.5 times over using landfill gas. However, not all of that's economically viable. Sometimes that landfill will be at too high an altitude and the generators won't run efficiently enough. Sometimes that landfill will be close to the grid and that landfill owner should sell that power back to the grid because they're going to want too much for that electricity because they have another alternative buyer. So you go through all these criteria and you get to a subset of that which is economically viable. Now that subset is still enough that you could power 10% of the Bitcoin network off landfill gas. And that's today. That's at the current price of Bitcoin and that's at the current price of carbon. Now, if you're like me, you're expecting Bitcoin to go up in the future. If you look at what's happening to the price of carbon and carbon markets, I'm expecting that to go up in the future. If you're looking at the cost of energy, I'm expecting that to go up in the future. So this is an ideal form of harnessing a low-cost energy source, because one of the advantages here is your cost of power when you're getting it from landfills is very low. And you're turning what sometimes is a variable cost, where you're paying the grid operator a variable cost depending on when you're accessing that wholesale electricity, you're turning that into a fixed cost. So that decreases the risk in the business. You're also getting that very cheaply because that's energy which the landfill owner could not otherwise sell. Right? It's not like a solar operator who has multiple potential buyers. They have one potential buyer and that's someone who'll set up shop on the landfill, and the only one who's crazy enough to do that is a Bitcoin miner. And so the answer is, even today, you have more than enough economically viable landfills out there in the world which can be doing Bitcoin mining. So the obstacle has not been, right now, like I'm in touch with a lot of different Bitcoin mining companies who want to do this. I'm also in touch with an increasing amount of landfill operators who want to do this as well. So it's like, well, okay, both parties want to do it. Why isn't it happening? And the reason it's not happening is you need the marriage celebrant in the middle to get these two parties married. And that marriage celebrant is someone who's prepared to finance them. And so that's the gap we really wanted to play, where we saw that there was a wide open gap in the credit space to be financing these operations. And the reason that gap exists is that it's a new field, it's a new area, and it's perceived as being high risk. But the reason it's high risk is that people don't understand it. But we've invested a lot of time in understanding the nuances of landfill gas power generation, landfill gas carbon credits, Bitcoin mining economics and infrastructure finance, and got to a point where we now have a fund thesis where we say, no, it's only risky if you don't understand when to invest, who to invest in, what cost of power to invest in, what sort of power purchase agreement to invest in. But once you have those guide rails in place, it's absolutely possible. So that's the bridge we wanted to create. How can we create a model where still having a very attractive to return to wholesale investors, we can be the marriage celebrant so that these deals that weren't happening through lack of finance can actually happen and can happen at some pace.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think you tweeted this one quote, or you mentioned it the other day somewhere. You said Bitcoin mining has the unique potential to be emission negative this decade, which is makes a lot of sense from what you just said. I guess, can you kind of expand on how it could happen so fast?
Yeah, so right now, the model that I look at is the Coinmetrics one, which is the most accurate measure of power consumption, then I've done some modeling to see what the actual emissions are. And when you talk Bitcoin emissions, of course, Bitcoin doesn't have any direct emissions. It's like EVs. It has no direct emissions. Like EVs, it's using electricity, so it has indirect emissions, or what carbon accountants call scope 2 emissions. And that's because the electricity used is, in some cases, in many cases, used fossil fuel. And so you look at that and you say, okay, so Bitcoin is right now, it's using 47% fossil fuel, which is very low. In fact, it's the lowest industry in the world for its fossil fuel use. And then you look at how many emissions is that power creating, and the answer right now is 35 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions per year. And then you look at, well, what things is it doing which are abating emissions? So there's two sources here. When it's using flared gas or vented methane gas. So in other words, what Crusoe Energy are doing, and this has been highlighted again by the World Economic Forum, so they're taking gas that would have been flared, and when it's flared, it burns. So this is when you have an oil field that might be an orphaned oil well, could be a landfill, could be anywhere, that's burning that gas. When it's burnt incompletely, which means that about 9% of the methane still goes directly into the atmosphere. And so what Crusoe are doing is they're saying, well, let's send it to a generator, which would burn almost 100% of that methane. So that's a delta of about 8.75%. And that's 8.75% of a gas that's 84 times more warming to the Earth than carbon dioxide that's not going into the atmosphere. So that has a measurable impact on abating emissions. So you're not taking methane out of the atmosphere. Sometimes reporters say, have headlines saying it's taking methane out of the atmosphere. No, it's not. It's stopping it. I would say doing something even better, which is stopping it because it's really expensive to try and sequester gases from the atmosphere. The best way is before it's gone in there to start with. So if you're using Bitcoin mining, you're stopping methane that would have gone into the atmosphere by going into it, by diverting it into a generator instead of going into the atmosphere. Now, in landfills, the problem's even worse. In landfills, flaring only happens a minority of the time. Most of the time, that methane's just going straight into the air. And remember, that methane is 84 times more warming than carbon dioxide. So here, you're not getting an 8.75% reduction in methane. You're getting a 100, or almost 100. You're getting a 90% reduction. 10% would have oxidized anyway. So that's a 90% reduction over what would have happened, which is massive, by sending it to a generator. At the same time, you're monetizing a wasted asset for the landfill owners. So then what you do is you look at the emissions of the Bitcoin network, and you start to say, well, how many megawatts will we need to take from landfills in order to completely offset the entire emissions of the Bitcoin network? And you use the 84 times multiplier to work out, okay, so for every ton of methane you're putting into a generator, as opposed to putting it in the atmosphere, that's the equivalent of 84 tons of carbon dioxide over a 20-year period. You do the math on that, and the answer you come up with is, it changes a little bit day to day depending on hash rate, but my latest calculation was 280 megawatts coming from landfill gas is enough to offset the entire emissions of the Bitcoin network. That's achievable. That is well achievable. An average-sized landfill, you might get 8 megawatts. So you're talking about 35 to 40 landfills. That is achievable. And that is well achievable this decade. So we could actually do this. Now, is Bitcoin's emissions going to grow in the meantime? Well, actually, my charting suggests it's not. It's kind of been flat over the last 4 years, because even though hash rate's been increasing, even though power consumption's going up, we're using sources of power which is more renewable, so the emission intensity is going down, power consumption is going up, the net effect is emissions is roughly static, in fact trending slightly downwards anyway. So even in 10 years' time, the probable positive emissions are going to be roughly similar, but the negative emissions, the abatement of emissions, is just ramping up and up and up. Even today, 6% of the Bitcoin network's emissions is actually mitigation of emissions. So in other words, that's used, if you just quantify the flared gas mitigation that's occurring today, that's offsetting 6% of Bitcoin's emissions. So we're at 6% now. The goal's to get to 100%. And the fastest way to do that is to use vented sources of methane, and the biggest and most abundant supply of them is landfills.
Nice. Yeah, I like it, and the math makes sense to me. What are your thoughts on Greenpeace? I see them constantly tweeting about change the code. Obviously, they don't take the same view as you right now, but how can we stop their attack and maybe encourage them to take on your perspective and KPMG's perspective?
That's a great question. I don't know if we can or not, and I don't even know whether that should be the goal, because that's depending on some people who have formed a very fixed view of Bitcoin, undoing that view. And they've spent a lot of energy and a lot of money on campaigning down a particular line. And the rules of human psychology say that once you've committed to a viewpoint heavily, then any new data you see, you'll tend to look at that data as evidence to support your existing viewpoint. And so I think that's happening at the moment. So I'm not sure whether they're the ones that we should try to convince otherwise. Of course, we always hold out hope, and eventually they will have to change their viewpoint because the world will leave them behind. In the same way that there was a group of people who are kicking and screaming, still claiming the Earth was flat. In fact, I think there's a website that argues that even today. But they've just become an increasingly isolated minority. And you're starting to see the evidence of that. So every time you get a new academic study, like the one that came out from MIT, that looked at the environmental positives of Bitcoin, not only its negative externalities, every time you have a KPMG very carefully thought through report which goes in depth and does what Greenpeace transparently and obviously have not done, and that's looked in a very nuanced way and talked to grid owners and talked to people who understand Bitcoin mining and talked to renewable power generators, and come up and done a database study rather than just talking to their existing tribe in a self-referential loop, then you come up with very different conclusions. And every time that happens, then the people who are holding onto that old narrative get increasingly isolated, and that becomes increasingly uncomfortable. And some people will double down, and other people will start to say, well, hang on, we seem to be in a minority. The evidence seems to be stacking up. More and more reputable people are actually saying that we are wrong. And now some of the people who we see as our peers and part of our tribe are even saying we're wrong. Maybe we should have a second look. So it'll happen organically by itself. If you look at how any technology, disruptive technology, comes into the world, this always happens. You always get people attack the new technology. And it is always due to fear because they do not understand it properly. Same happened with the bicycle. That was attacked as being something which would cause psychotic episodes. There was a new timepiece on that. Same happened with radio. Same happened with the printing press. Same happened with the internet. And the same is happening with Bitcoin. So I just see this as a rite of passage. And eventually what happens is the analysis improves. People understand it more. And bit by bit, the naysayers start to find themselves in the minority, and truth wins.
Yeah, completely agree. I think that was very well said. Curious, one or two more questions. What do you think is, since you have this great background in renewables and energy and climate tech, do you have a preference on like which source of energy you think is best? Do you think that they're used in different applications? Do you think one's going to grow more than the other? What are your thoughts on the future of producing energy?
In terms of the energy that's going to be powering the Bitcoin network?
Oh, not necessarily, or that, however you want to take it, that, or just like globally, like nuclear, solar, wind, however you want to take it.
I'm not an expert on the subject of energy, and I know a little bit about a lot of things, but I'm certainly not an energy expert. What I can see happening, though, increasingly, is that particularly within Bitcoin, but not only Bitcoin, is uses of stranded energy is becoming more and more important. So in other words, people are saying, well, if we're wasting energy, that's bad for a few reasons. It's going to be cheaper energy. You're not taking it away from anyone. But also, if it's wasted energy from sources that we want to incentivize more of, then if we use that and turn it into money, we'll be incentivizing those forms of energy we want more of. So those are forms such as, in my view, solar, wind, and stranded energy from oil and gas industry, from landfills, from farms, from wastewater, things that would be a form of pollution, which we're now turning into a monetizable asset. What will happen is that Bitcoin will often be the leader, will be the catalyst for the monetization and the mitigation of these forms of energy, but it won't necessarily be the last user. And we're seeing this with Crusoe Energy already, where Bitcoin miners went in and solved a problem, which was flared gas, which was leading to partial burning of methane and a lot still escaping. They solved that problem. But then once they solved that problem, once you invested that capex to solve that problem, then they would bring in traditional data centers, high-performance computing, artificial intelligence, to then join the party. It didn't make sense for them to do it to start with, but it made sense for them to do it once that initial capital expenditure had been made. So I can see a future where Bitcoiners will play a role where they'll be hunting out some of these sources of electricity that are unviable. Sometimes where big solar or wind projects have been built, where they're essentially white elephants because they are supplying more power than is needed, or because they cannot transport that power. And they will, and this is what's happened in Texas, is exactly what happened in Texas. Everyone went, okay, where's a lot of abundant sun? Where's a lot of abundant wind? And it was all in West Texas. And very little thought was about, well, where's the population who needs it? Oh, whoops, they're all in East Texas. How do we get it there? The grid can't do it. So Bitcoin miners really came and saved the day with being an off-taker for that energy that otherwise would have been unviable. And if it's unviable, you're not going to get more people moving in when it's already economically unprofitable. So I do see a future where whatever source of energy we're using, Bitcoin mining is going to play a part by making forms of new energy viable, which otherwise weren't, and to help make it more profitable by being the scavenger of that energy. And that profit is going to plow directly back into expanding those renewable generation activities.
Awesome, 100%. Yeah, I think that was great. Daniel, if someone wants to learn more about you or your fund, where can they find you or your fund?
Yeah, so best way to find me is on Twitter. So that's at DS Batten. And our fund is CH4 Capital, originally named, and mitigating CH4 on methane. So ch4capital.com.
Love it. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for coming on. This was awesome.